With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. Today is Friday, July 21st. Coming up in today's show, a big comeback for the incredible edible egg. We'll have more on that in a moment, but first we start today with Taylor Hillman.
Predicting the next consumer trend in the supermarket can be a challenge, and listening to those consumers won't always help. Bruce Taylor, chairman and CEO of Taylor Farms and Taylor Fresh Foods, shared an experience with the audience at the Forbes Ag Tech Summit, where they were trying to be proactive by listening to consumers.
Yeah, we went through a whole process of consumer focus groups to try to figure out what do they want in the form of a meal kit. And most consumers said, we want to spend 20 minutes preparing dinner. And so we put together a meal kit that took 20 minutes to prepare. And what we found is that that was more their aspiration than the reality. The reality is they don't have 20 minutes every night to prepare dinner. They need something they can throw in the oven quickly or something they can microwave immediately, right? And so we just completely missed the mark by listening to the consumer in a separate environment. So what we do now is it's just fast innovation where we quickly put out new products on the shelf with our retail partners. And it's very clear very soon what's going to work and what's not going to work. And so whatever works, we make more of it, right? Whatever doesn't work, we discontinue and come out with the next new product. And so we find that's much more effective.
Taylor said although that strategy doesn't sound too complicated, there are other factors that go into the process. And it can be something as simple as timing that makes a product successful or not.
There's definitely an issue about being too early. Right, so certain products, I mean, take quinoa, for example. If we'd introduced quinoa 5 years ago, it would have fallen flat. Now it's very popular. Same with Brussels sprouts, right? Brussels sprouts didn't exist 5 years ago. They'd almost died, right? And now that's the most popular vegetable growing. We can't find enough Brussels sprouts. So that's just an example of sometimes the timing's a bit off. And so you just have to keep coming back and trying new things. And sometimes you put something out now that you put out 5 years ago and failed. So you try it again now.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
Specialty Crop News, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. It's time for growers to be planning for harvest dust reduction. Carissa Sauer, Almond Board Manager of Industry Relations, tells us more.
Harvest is right around the corner, and we know that it's going to be a busy, hectic, hot time and a dusty time. Well, we can't do much to help the weather or change the pace of bringing in the crop, there are steps that we can take to manage dust at harvest. We know that during harvest, dust escapes the confines of the orchard and creeps onto roadways, schools, playgrounds, and neighboring homes. And together, everyone involved in growing and harvesting almonds can help make a difference to improve our air quality in the Central Valley. Right now, we're in the pre-harvest stage. It's time to be thinking about starting with a clean orchard floor. Clean orchard floors make all of the dust management practices easier. It helps reduce suction fan speed on pickup machines that really can knock a lot of dust out of the process without losing harvest efficiency. It's also a time to sit down and communicate with your harvest crew and other folks that are helping in the process and to communicate with your new neighbors. Give them clear expectations of when you plan to start harvest and think about your route. Take every opportunity to blow dust back into the orchard using the tree canopy as a natural filter. Trees in their canopies can help capture the dust before it reaches roads, homes, and other sensitive areas. Plan your passes and travel in directions that direct dust away from roads. And if you're near a busy road, consider placing traffic signs to warn motorists of harvest activities. These are just a few of the steps to be taking before harvest begins. Check out almonds.com/harvestdust for technical guides in both English and Spanish, a managing dust harvest toolkit that includes four of the key strategies to manage dust. And finally, there are videos in both English and Spanish that cover pre-harvest sweeping and pickup and the different steps that you can take with existing equipment to modify and practices that you can take to help us all breathe easier during harvest.
Carissa Sauer, Almond Board Manager of Industry Relations. A bipartisan group of 135 senators and representatives wrote letters to the Trump administration asking for help for the nation's cotton farmers. The group wants the administration, through USDA, to operate the cotton ginning cost share program effective for the 2016 crop year and on an ongoing basis. The letters noted that the U.S. cotton industry has had its share of hard times, enduring a World Trade Organization challenge, increasing foreign subsidies, tariff and non-tariff barriers to trade, and a weak U.S. safety net. Those challenges have led to the lowest amount of cotton planted in the last 30 years. Global cotton prices were once $2 per pound and have tumbled to 57 cents per pound, plus record production costs have been higher than financial returns for three straight years. The group of legislators say the cost share program would help bridge the gap from now until the Farm Bill is written. Cotton farmers don't have a safety net similar to what's available for other farmers, so they're much more exposed to the volatility in world markets. Without help, the letters say nearly 18,000 cotton producers will continue to struggle with diminishing returns and higher debt loads. A U.S. appeals court in San Francisco denied a petition from environmental groups to force the Environmental Protection Agency to ban the pesticide chlorpyrifos. Reuters says that decision ends one of three parallel attempts to get the ban put in place. The groups, including Earth Justice and the Natural Resources Defense Council, wanted the ban in place because they alleged the EPA took too long to make a decision on the safety of the pesticide. The judges wrote in their findings that even though EPA did drag its heels on the matter for 10 years, the agency has done what judges asked it to do. The court had previously ordered the EPA to issue a final decision on the 10-year petition to ban the pesticide, which is considered a neurotoxin by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The EPA formally denied petition on March 29th, and the environmental groups alleged the denial was inadequate because it did not contain any new safety findings. A lawyer for Earth Justice says the groups are pursuing two other court challenges related to the EPA's decision in March. This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. This week's Western View is coming up after the break. We will be back in just a moment.
Banter Miticide presents Might Banter.
Whoa! Would you look at the living space on this almond leaf, Martha?
But you know we'll need to redecorate. The color scheme is very dated.
It's green, honey. It's a leaf.
Don't let mites take up residence in your almond orchard. Knock them down fast with new Banter Miticide from UPI. Banter is formulated to control the most damaging mites and keep them away for weeks. To learn more, contact your PCA or UPI representative today.
Don't let fire ants ruin the value of almond crops. Get long-lasting control of fire ants and other protein-feeding ants with a steam ant bait from Valent. Worker ants carry a steam ant bait back to the queen. Once there, the powerful activity prevents the queen from laying eggs and stops existing larvae from becoming adults. With no new worker ants, the entire colony is effectively wiped out, leaving orchards ant-free for months to come. To learn more, talk to your PCA or go to valent.com/esteemantbait. Always read and follow label instructions.
Get control of flies on your dairy operation with an integrated pest management program built around Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products from Central Life Sciences. Clarifly Larvicide offers feed-through control that prevents the emergence of nuisance flies from the manure of treated animals by as much as 96%. And Starbar features a lineup of baits, traps, and sprays that address fly problems in all areas of your dairy operation. Flies can spread disease and lead to decreases in milk quality and yields. Learn how to limit their impact at starbarproducts.com.
Attention California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. Make plans now to attend the 26th Annual Citrus Expo, August 16th and 17th in Fort Myers, Florida. The latest in citrus research and data, including advances against HLB, will be presented over a dozen seminars. More than 165 exhibitors will be showcasing their newest products, services, and technologies for the citrus industry. Don't wait, pre-register now at citrusexpo.net. That's citrusexpo.net.
There's a long, painful history in the Owens Valley of an area that has one major landlord who could care less about the people who live there. That landlord is the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and they stepped over the bounds again in their treatment of Inyo County, and this time the county has become the mouse that roared. This whole valley on the eastern side of the Sierras once was a blossoming agricultural center till L.A. bought it and killed it off. What could have been rich farmland now simply provides water to Los Angeles. It was in the early 1900s that Los Angeles developers quietly began buying water rights and all the land that they could in the Owens Valley and all the mountains around it. They built a canal and they shipped the water south. That farmland dried up and blew away. The stores and businesses that built up to support the farms were closed, and the people who lost their livelihood moved away. The people left behind lived with the LADWP, but it was never a good relationship. If a homeowner had a river on his property, he couldn't use it as the water belonged to the city of Los Angeles. The department drained Owens Lake, causing such major pollution problems that the citizens had to turn to the courts to get relief. Likewise, Mono Lake was saved only after protracted legal action that kept the city from completely draining it. But the department got greedy one last time, and now the long-suffering people of Inyo County are standing up. The county rents land from the LADWP for landfills, a total of 270 acres on three sites. The department decided they weren't getting enough rent, and they raised it by 400%. In addition, the department now wanted additional payments for the dirt used for covering trash, and a host of other changes which meant big rate increases for the people of Inyo County. It was just too much. The county filed a notice of eminent domain and invited the department to send out an appraiser. The department said no thanks, so it was Inyo that determined the land was worth $522,000. But the department declined the county's offer, and now they're headed to court. $522,000. That's a lot of money for land that doesn't even have any water rights. I'm Len Wilcox. That's the Western View from AgNet West.
Well, in today's livestock news, during last week's cattle industry summer business meeting held in Denver, Colorado, producers serving on the Beef Checkoff's Export Growth Committee heard from members of the U.S. Meat Export Federation staff regarding global trends of beef production and consumption. With more on that story, here's Joe Sheely.
In this U.S. Meat Export Federation report, USMEF economist Aaron Bohr explains that chilled beef exports to key Asian markets are a primary factor in this year's growth.
So what's driving this? Chilled U.S. beef. Your high-quality beef is what's driving this. And we're growing market share, but we're also growing consumption. This is all underpinned by availability of U.S. beef, of course, now that we're producing more. Consumer confidence, rebuilding that confidence after BSE, especially in places like Korea where it has not been easy. And end-user success, so telling our customers, you know, how can U.S. beef be profitable for you? And so these are all key factors that are driving success in these main markets. This is our chilled market share specifically. Over 50% in Japan and Korea of their chilled beef imports is U.S., and we ship more chilled beef to Japan than frozen. Taiwan, we're over 70%. And part of the way that we're driving growth in market share is we're competing on a wider range of cuts. And so we're displacing some of these end cuts that Australians supply, and we're actually competitive on those. And we're teaching them how to utilize these block cuts.
Dan Hallstrom, USMEF Senior Vice President for Marketing, explains some of the advantages of chilled beef exports.
The importance of chilled is it tends to be 52-week-a-year business. So if you buy frozen, you can buy when the price is low and not buy when it's high. But with chilled, you're buying every week. The customers are importing it every week. The other obvious advantage of chilled is that when you freeze something in thaw, and the meat scientists in the room will tell you, that you start to break those cells down, you have more cooking loss, less juiciness, less tenderness. When it's chilled, you're holding it at 30 to 32 degrees Fahrenheit all the way from the packing plant to the customer in Korea or Japan. So chilled is the goal here in the Asian markets, and it's worked well.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. Well, U.S. Ag Secretary Sandy Perdue met with his counterpart from Brazil this week to discuss the U.S. ban on fresh beef imports from Brazil. Perdue said the U.S. needs to see more progress from Brazil on beef inspections before the ban would be lifted. A CattleNetwork.com article said the ban went into effect June 22nd, as the U.S. said a high percentage of beef imports from Brazil did not pass safety checks. Perdue said the Brazilian Ag Secretary did push for a timeline to restore beef imports, but Perdue said that would depend on the progress made by Brazil. And the House Appropriations Committee adopted an amendment to the fiscal 2018 Homeland Security spending bill that would help dairy producers and other farmers that need year-round labor. The amendment would expand the types of businesses that can apply for the H-2A visa program for temporary or seasonal workers. National Milk Producers Federation President Jim Mulhern said the amendment recognizes that we need to create new approaches to getting dairy employers the labor they need. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Well, it's time for a new census of agriculture. We do a new census every 5 years. Why so frequently? because this is the only source of information, comprehensive and impartial data, that covers every county in the nation. So who uses it? Well, that would surprise you. It's used by federal, state, and local governments, agribusinesses, trade groups, educators, researchers, plus farmers themselves. It covers things like production practices, income, expenses, and changes. The census keeps tabs on how many farms and who operates them, and it's the only source that does that. Time allotted for the census is 180 days, but seldom done in that allotted time. May take the rest of the year, but it's worth it. If you're a farmer, make sure you're counted. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Griner, AgNet West.
In today's interview segment, our Taylor Hillman talks with Tom Nassif of Western Growers at the recent Forbes AgTech Summit.
I'm Tom Nassif, and I'm president and CEO of Western Growers.
So we're here at the Forbes AgTech Summit. They host it right outside the doors here of the center you guys have. What's the importance of technology and the continuation of the conversation of technology to solve some of the challenges we have in agriculture?
Well, as you know, we've got a crisis with our labor supply. It's getting worse. It'll never get better. We can't depend on the government to give us the legislation we need to adequately address our issues. So we have to take matters into our own hands. Some have done that by planting other crops that are less labor intensive. Some have sold their businesses. Some have gone to foreign countries for their production. But for us, we want to see the production continue here. So we thought if we could find a way to preserve scarce human and natural resources and make a smaller footprint on the environment by helping entrepreneurs and startups who are interested in ag technology, by putting them together with their ultimate client, which is the farmer, to find out whether or not their creation is commercially viable, and maybe to get some investment and startup money to help perfect it and pilot programs on the farm, that would be a great service to the industry and to the consumers at large.
That was leading in my next question was, not only is the technology important, but so is the funding to have backers, investors. I mean, that nothing's going to go if those people aren't here listening and finding out what this stuff does.
We're doing the same thing with venture capitalists. It's trying to bring them here to meet these people, come to the center, see what's going on, talk to the farmers about how useful this technology would be, to see if it's something they're interested in funding. We also have a fund we're invested in. You know, we've got about Western Growers members and Western Growers itself, we've put in about $4 million into a fund, and we've already invested in, you know, 10 startups with seed money. So we're doing what we hope others will do, is put your money where your mouth is.
We talked about the labor challenges. There's been a lot of talk about bolstering an H-2A program. Do you see the answer to some of these challenges, an H-2A program with some of these labor challenges? A stronger H-2A program? I know a lot of facilities around here have something like that, like Spreckles and other groups. Do you see that being an answer to some of these challenges?
You know, we don't want H-2A reform to be the answer. We want immigration reform to be the answer. But until we get immigration reform, because even once it passes, it'll probably take 2 to 3 years to implement, we need H-2A reform. So we're working with the government and with agencies to try and make it an easier process, less agencies involved in the vetting, use more technology than you have in the past. Instead of snail mail, let's use our email. I mean, it's a very backward process. And so many things occur between the four agencies that look at this consecutively rather than concurrently. Whereas they could be doing it concurrently and cut maybe 2-3 quarters of the time down to what would be a normal vetting process. So there's a lot that can be done with H-2A reform also.
I think sometimes the rest of the country, besides the specialty crop areas, doesn't quite understand the need for labor and the challenge labor brings, especially specialty crops, California, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Texas. Lots of specialty crops are really labor intensive. And so when we have labor challenges, it really hurts this side. And expressing that area's message to the rest of the United States is important. Otherwise, they never see it.
What I would say to those people is, one, how much would you want to be paid to do that work? Two, do you know anybody who wants to do that work? And three, do you know anybody that's raising their child to do that work? And if the answer is, as I suspect it will be, they'll have a better understanding of why we need foreign labor.
Last question here. The importance of an event like this, the Forbes Ag Tech Summit, is not only to bring that technology to the forefront, technologies that will help, but also find and vet technology to the ones that really are doable for growers, that are really make sense for growers. We can't just adopt any technology. We've got to find the ones that work right.
What we do is we ask our members to help us vet technologies. Sit down, talk to them, and tell us, is this the real deal? Or is this pie in the sky? And they know, they're pretty good judges of what's going to work and what won't work and what their needs are. So that's the advantage we have, is they're our own members. And who better to answer the questions as to whether or not the technology is useful?
Once again, Taylor Hillman talking with Tom Nassib. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Better Miticide presents Mite Better.
Oh, would you look at the living space on this almond leaf, Martha?
But you know, we'll need to redecorate. The color scheme is very dated.
It's green, honey. It's a leaf.
Don't let mites take up residence in your almond orchard. Knock them down fast with new Better Miticide from UPI. Better is formulated to control the most damaging mites and keep them away for weeks. To learn more, contact your PCA or UPI representative today.
Don't let fire ants ruin the value of almond crops. Get long-lasting control of fire ants and other protein-feeding ants with a steam ant bait from Valent. Worker ants carry a steam ant bait back to the queen. Once there, the powerful activity prevents the queen from laying eggs and stops existing larvae from becoming adults. With no new worker ants, the entire colony is effectively wiped out, leaving orchards ant-free for months to come. To learn more, talk to your PCA or go to valent.com/esteem ant bait. Always read and follow label instructions.
Get control of flies on your dairy operation with an integrated pest management program built around Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products from Central Life Sciences. Clarifly Larvicide offers feed-through control that prevents the emergence of nuisance flies from the manure of treated animals by as much as 96%. And Starbar features a lineup of baits, traps, and sprays that address fly problems in all areas of your dairy operation. Flies can spread disease and lead to decreases in milk quality and yields. Learn how to limit their impact at starbarproducts.com.
This is Farm City Newsday. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation anytime you want, all on our website, agnetwest.com.
Attention California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. Make plans now to attend the 26th Annual Citrus Expo, August 16th and 17th in Fort Myers, Florida. The latest in citrus research and data, including advances against HLV, will be presented over a dozen seminars. More than 165 exhibitors will be showcasing their newest products, services, and technologies for the citrus industry. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net. That's citrusexpo.net.
I'll take dig a little, learn a lot for 30 bushels.
Soft and crumbly. Tom.
How does healthy soil feel to the touch?
Correct.
Dig a little for 40 bushels.
Sweet and earthy. Tom.
What does healthy soil smell like?
Yes. Go again.
Dig a little for 50 bushels.
Dark, porous, and alive. Tom.
What does healthy soil look like?
You win.
Understanding the basics and benefits of healthy soil can make your farm a winner too, through lower input costs, better yields, and drought protection, which can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how you can unlock the secrets in your soil This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Could recent seismic activity in Yellowstone National Park be a sign of the eruption of a caldera there in the near future? Rod Bain looks into it.
Recent seismic activity within Yellowstone National Park is perhaps reminders on two levels. One is that the area and its natural wonders are the result of a caldera or supervolcano under the surface. And second, there has been talk in recent years about the potential of a giant eruption of the Yellowstone caldera. Mike Stickney of the Montana Bureau of Mines and Geology explains that although this summer's earthquake swarms have been the strongest in 7 years,
it is not at all outside of normal behavior for the park. Swarms are common in the park, and there have been much more energetic swarms.
So basically,
we have no reason to believe that the current activity is leading to any sort of a larger phenomena, either a larger earthquake or any sort of volcanic activity.
For reference, the last super eruption of the Yellowstone caldera over 630,000 years ago is believed to have produced 1,000 times more volcanic ash than the 1980s eruption of Mount St. Helens. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Everyone loves a good comeback story, and on this edition of Agriculture USA, Gary Crawford has one about eggs.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you.
It was 1950 when this song was a big hit on turntables across the country, and on breakfast, lunch, and dinner tables, eggs were a big hit. The average American that year eating 377 eggs. But into the 1960s, Americans began severely cutting back on eggs, eating fewer and fewer every year. And that cutback has continued up until just recently. But now, eggs are making a comeback. We'll find out why and how, and we'll meet a man who has broken several world records relating to eggs, broken a lot of eggs, too, on this edition of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford. Let's go back to the mid-60s smash hit show Batman, this time featuring Vincent Price as Egghead. And he's just kidnapped the police commissioner and has Batman scrambling to break the case.
Never mind the bad jokes. I know you have, Commissioner Gordon.
And do you also know what we want in exchange?
What is the ransom?
Oh, just 10 cents, Batman, for every egg eaten in Gotham City.
Holy eggshells! In a few days, that would add up to millions.
And back in the mid-60s, Robin would be right. But as we said at the top, during the 60s, egg consumption began to fall almost as fast as Batman's TV ratings after the first season.
In 1960, per capita consumption was about 321 eggs. In the mid-1990s, we saw that number fall down to 230.
Finally, sinking to 227 eggs per person, according to Agriculture Department analyst there, Shale Shagum. The reasons? Well, first, as more and more women were entering the workforce, there was what Shagum calls a
shift away from the traditional breakfast that we had of bacon and eggs and solid breakfasts. You also had some concerns in the mid-1990s about the level of cholesterol in eggs. That probably had an impact on consumption of eggs as well.
And so by 1995, again, per capita egg consumption was down from 377 eggs in 1950 to only 227. But then things began to change. Consumption started up again.
In fact, the average American eats about 265 eggs per year.
That's Ann Alonzo. She heads up the American Egg Board, and she was out here at the Agriculture Department's Farmers Market in Washington. And in fact, it looks like egg consumption this year could be approaching 270 eggs a person. Alonzo says the growth in the last 4 years particularly has been very rapid. One reason is that many restaurants, of course, have begun offering breakfast all day.
One of the game changers there was McDonald's, and many other large retailers have followed suit. So people, millennials and others that have different time frames in terms of their lifestyles, they can eat eggs all day.
Oh, wait a minute, though. What about eggs being bad for you because of the high cholesterol content?
Well, research has gotten a lot more sophisticated, and research has finally indicated that that's not the case.
All right, we want you to meet Howard Helmer here, one of the long-running cheerleaders for eggs. He has broken world records for the shortest time to make a single omelet, 27 seconds, the fastest omelet flipper, and he still holds the record for making the most omelets in 30 minutes time, 437 omelets. So,
You might say, Howard, you're just a little egg-centric there.
Eccentric I might be, yeah.
Yeah, but he knows his egg. So back to the cholesterol situation, according to recent research.
Blood cholesterol and dietary cholesterol are two different things, and that an egg which is high in dietary cholesterol does not translate to blood cholesterol. That's been proven once and for all. As a result, egg sales have skyrocketed.
That's good. But, while I've got you here, I want to try out a few of my egg jokes on you, okay? Like, what day do eggs hate the most? Friday! Hey, that didn't work for you. Okay, Howard, how do eggs leave the highway? They use the exit. Nothing. No, I guess you've heard them all, right?
I think I have heard every egg joke, yes.
Howard, we have to tell people, you're 80 years old. You have the energy of somebody a lot younger.
Well, thank you. And can I blame it on the eggs? Why not?
Well, I don't think you can go quite that far.
No, I suppose not.
No. But Howard, you can try.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we have laid another egg here with this edition of Egg Reculture USA. Yeah, I'm Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.